fight. And here we are, learning about fight from all of you. So I'll jump in. Thank you all so much for doing this today. I'm really looking forward to getting your input as we are seeing so many things taken away. People who are really hurting, and it's kind of really important that we're here today in the legacy of Speaker Frank Chopp, who cared about real people and the impacts, to be here at this facility today. I think it's been 50 years since.
50.
That's incredible. Well, I know he's here with us.
Yes.
Because this is something he cares deeply about. We're here today because we really want to talk about the really critical programs that are being cut, slashed, burned at the federal level, so I can find out from all of you what the impacts are here in Washington State and take that back with me as I do fight the fight. It's just the essential basic necessities that we are seeing taken away from people, whether it's early child Head Start being decimated, whether it's Social Security offices being shut down, whether it's food programs, healthcare programs. We've seen here in our state closing the HHS office in Seattle. I want to know how that's going to impact our ability to make sure that people have what they need, whether it's the 40% cut of NIH funding and how that impacts our families and what it means. I mean, the list is really long. So I wanted to come out here today on the ground to hear from all of you so I could take that information back with me, because I know it's been really challenging. So Shalimar, thank you for having us here at Solid Ground, and I'm going to let you start.
Hey, thank you. Thank you for joining us here in the, I like to say, in the house that Frank Chopp built.
Yes.
Is where we're sitting. You had an extensive list, and I would probably just say all of that. Yeah. I could maybe just summarize by saying all of that. So for Solid Ground, we've been around for 50 years as an anti-poverty agency as part of the Community Action Network, same with Neighborhood House. And that means that we serve folks that are the most vulnerable in our communities, folks that are living in the margins, living on the extremes, that are needing all sorts of assistance, whether it's food support, housing support, rental support, behavior health, mental health, utility support. Anything that somebody might need to survive, the basic needs, like you said, is what we provide here. And we've been doing that for 50 years, and we plan on doing that as long as we're able to. And so as an agency, we generally support about 70,000 folks a year that are coming, whether it's in person through our doors or calling and needing some virtual supports as well. And for us, the number one thing that we are most concerned about are cuts that are related to SNAP, that are related to Medicaid, and that are related to Head Start. So those are I would say, our three biggest areas of concern right now. We have heard loud and clear from our program participants and folks that are coming to us that those are the areas in which they use the most. So being able to have access to safe and healthy foods, and being able to do that on the very limited incomes that they have is the number one thing. And so being able to access things like Family Works and their food bank and other food banks in our area are incredibly important for them. And then counter on the other side of that is the rest of their well-being and their physical well-being and their mental well-being. And so being able to have access to Medicaid and everything that comes with that is the things that people are most concerned about and the things that we are most concerned about. Those are the number one things when people are calling us that they need help trying to figure out how do they get access. And this is, thinking about coming out of the pandemic, It's folks that are living on all levels of income levels right now that are utilizing food banks. It's not just folks oftentimes think, oh, food banks, and those are folks that are at the very low incomes, and that's not necessarily true anymore because the cost of living has skyrocketed so much. The cost of food has skyrocketed so much. We'll see very shortly probably what happens with tariffs and when it comes to food and the cost of living. And so those are the things that every single day that we grapple with as an agency and that our families and the individuals that we're working with are grappling with as well. And so those are the pieces that I really wanted to kind of lift up. And then the other piece that I just want to kind of just talk about real briefly is of note around HHS specifically is that that is part of the work of that team, is to determine the federal poverty line and the federal poverty levels. And so, and we utilize that for services, and quite often there might be other nonprofits at this table and other organizations that utilize those federal poverty levels to determine who gets access to what services. And so if that entire work is no longer done, then what happens to essentially the safety net that supposedly has been created for folks in this country, for citizens and everybody else that's coming? It won't exist any longer. And so that is our biggest concern, in addition to those immediate services, is the federal poverty level and who's going to hold that work. And hopefully whoever does holds it in the way that it has been held for these number of years.
Yeah. And you don't know.
No idea.
Yeah.
No idea.
Thank you. Thanks for all the work you do.
Of course, yeah.
Thank you, Senator Murray, for pulling us together. It's so wonderful to see you and to have worked with you for over a decade on childcare, which I feel like we're now looking at just going backwards, full steam behind, which is really sad and frustrating. So as Secretary of the Department of Children, Youth, and Families now, I don't think I've seen you since I've been the legislator.
Congratulations, yeah.
Thank you. But we are really concerned for our families. And while we're living in a time of unknowns, what we certainly do know is that these federal cuts are going to hurt families, whether it's childcare, home visiting programs, young kids with disabilities, which I know you've had a passion for too. It's going to have a devastating impact on families and our ability as DCYF to serve them. As you know, our agency does child care. We do the child welfare agency system, adoption supports, which affect all ranges of families, juvenile rehabilitation, early intervention services for infants and toddlers, and so on. And the cuts are just going to have a huge impact on the diverse families that we serve. So we spend about $950 million a year in federal funds, and that's about 30% of our budget. And as of today, we have $117 million that are either frozen, delayed, or just in general in limbo. And that's directly impacting services. It's around TANF, child care subsidies, and case management services. So whether it's CCDF or SSBG or a variety of other programs, but it's impacting families and children who've been abused and neglected across the scope, and just entire programs are just even being rumored to be cut, and that just creates this instability. And I think, as Shalimar was saying, it's not just the cuts to DCYF, but the families we serve are going to experience the cumulative impacts, whether it's school meals, healthcare, energy assistance, all of which are being cut. And so it's that intersection. And some of those services would help build family resilience, and that's gone, and the long-term impact is gonna be what families feel. So it's pretty devastating. But on that uncertainty, it's funny, because I was thinking about it, kids like routine. Right? And it's calming, it's predictable, it's certain, and right now the road ahead is anything but that, right? And so that is just yet another aspect. Of course, as you know, and we'll hear more, our entire administration for children and families is just fired with no notice, and put Head Start funding in total limbo. And, as you've heard, Head Start providers shutting their doors, throwing them into economic uncertainty. And, again, as you know, childcare is a huge economic driver. Parents can go to work when they have childcare, and those early interventions just help the families, help the children for that long-term benefit. So too many families are being caught up in that stop and start, the economic busting policies, and haphazard layoffs, frankly. And that's not an environment for healthy childhood development or stable families, especially already those challenged by trauma and poverty and abuse. So thank you for pulling us together.
You said 117 million has already been frozen or is frozen or you can't get access to.
Yep.
So what does that actually mean in terms of what you're putting out in programs right now? Have you had to lay off anybody? What have you done?
We have not, because it's still kind of in that limbo. We just don't know. A lot of it is some discretionary money that, you know, every year we're always, you know, hoping we're getting. And a lot of it is around TANF that kind of impacts and provides extra funds for us either to do the matching dollars or to maintenance of effort dollars, or just allow low-income families to access child care subsidies. So those subsidies are going to go away for those families. So it's really...
Have you had to notify anybody yet that the subsidies are going away? Or are you holding?
We've been holding off so far.
Yeah. How long can you do that?
Probably another month.
Well, thank you. Appreciate it. Tim.
I'm Tao Kwan Get, State Health Officer with Washington Department of Health. And first, I just want to thank you for being a tireless champion of public health and health care for all Americans. Also want to thank Governor Ferguson and Attorney General Brown for all of their efforts to protect us from these federal cuts. So I've served as a pediatrician and public health professional for more than 30 years, and I can't think of a time when the federal government has injected so much uncertainty and unpredictable change in our public health and healthcare systems. So in less than 100 days, the Trump administration has made significant cuts to federal public health programs, eliminated our Northwest Regional HHS office, as you mentioned, proposed cuts to Medicaid and other federal programs that all Washingtonians rely on for their health and safety. And we worry not only about the damage that has already been done, but the damage that may yet be done by the loss of these programs that Washingtonians depend on. So top of mind are programs that help us track the health of mothers and babies, programs that help prevent chronic diseases and injuries, programs that prevent and do research on HIV and sexually transmitted infections, and programs that save lives through offering treatment for substance use disorder and opioid use disorder. And because the regional HHS office was one of five regional offices that was closed, we've lost a really important connection between Washington, D.C. and our region, which includes Alaska, Oregon, Idaho, and Washington. And this was a team of professionals who helped our states navigate the federal system. They made sure that our unique geographic needs were represented to policymakers, and they helped coordinate our activities. So we will definitely feel the loss of this office. Besides restructuring last month, the federal government tried to terminate $11 billion in CDC grants that were allocated to states for the pandemic. And this included $140 million in federal funding for Washington. Fortunately, thanks to the lawsuit by Washington State Attorney General Brown, along with 22 other states in D.C., we have the temporary restraining order that is for now keeping these grants in place. But already we've had to interrupt work, and that has been really disruptive. And if the cuts go through, we're really worried about the impacts to our state. It would mean canceling more than 100 vaccine clinics in communities across the state, many of them low-income and rural areas. It would include 35 school-based clinics, which was anticipated to serve 800 children. And this is at a time when getting more kids vaccinated against measles is really the key to preventing a large outbreak of measles in Washington, like what we are seeing in Texas and Oklahoma and New Mexico. It would mean elimination of positions that help schools and childcare centers monitor and prevent infections. It would mean laying off staff who would be activated in the event of a bird flu outbreak. And these are teams that would help local health departments track cases, help farmers keep their workers healthy. It would delay updates to our public health laboratory systems. And these systems would help us respond more quickly to future outbreaks, as well as other biological, chemical, radiation. And it will increase waiting times for Washingtonians to get vital records like birth certificates and death certificates. critically important documents that you need for employment, insurance, benefits, and all kinds of things.
Because the HHS office was the person who you called if you needed a birth certificate?
It's because some of this funding supported staff and systems that allow our vital records to respond more quickly. And so losing this funding will mean that we won't be able to have these staff and systems available. And also, we're very concerned about any proposed cuts to Medicaid. Any cuts or reductions in access to care will harm the most vulnerable people in our state, especially in low-income and rural areas. Any changes in eligibility and work requirements can make it harder for people to get insurance. Decreases in the federal match rate, you know, the amount that the federal government matches for every dollar that our state spends on Medicaid, that will likely mean fewer healthcare providers to serve these patients, not just Medicaid patients, but all of our patients. This will lead to more people who are uninsured, fewer people who are getting preventive services. So instead of going to primary care providers for health problems when they're earlier and easier to treat, people will delay care until they're sicker and their health problems are more serious and end up going to the emergency department for care, which we all know is much more expensive. And this isn't just going to harm people on Medicaid. This means higher costs for all Washingtonians. So in summary, these changes and proposed cuts really add up to a worrisome prognosis for the health of all Washingtonians. And this is a time when we should be building trust and making our communities healthier by investing more in public health, by investing more in healthcare. But instead, these chaotic federal changes seem to be doing the exact opposite. And we really worry that these changes threaten to put us on a path towards more illness and shorter lives.
Because of the lawsuit, you are still getting the funding, or the funding's on hold?
Because of the lawsuit, we are still getting funding. However, there are some long-term projects that we have on hold until we can be sure that funding will be available to see through the end of the project.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Janice. Good afternoon. Thank you so much for inviting me here. My name is Janice Deguchi, Executive Director of Neighborhood Health. We are also a community action agency like Solid Ground here. We serve over 13,000 individuals in Seattle and King County from birth to end of life, majority of whom are immigrants or refugees. We have 350 staff that speak 40 different languages. And so I want to share a little bit about three different programs, but we also say that we receive a significant amount of federal dollars. SAMHSA is one I know, Medicaid, we have Medicaid long-term care. We're an aging disability resource center. We help people that are older adults or people with disabilities stay in their homes and not admit to a nursing home and maintain their health as long as possible. We have Head Start, of course, the workforce programs, all sorts of programs that serve people throughout their lives through birth through end of life. We talked about a lot about Head Start already. Neighborhood House serves 429 low-income children in our early Head Start and Head Start program at four locations in Seattle and King County, and then opening a fifth in May. We're going to open it. we'll see what happens. And I was sharing with Dr. Tao that a third of our children have special needs, undiagnosed special needs, and how we have changed our program from meeting minimum licensing requirements of two teachers and 18 to 20 kids to now having three teachers and 15 kids in our preschool classroom, because children are that needy in terms of their development. And I want to share a story of one child, 12-month-old Kai, who had not yet learned how to crawl. He would not sit in meals. He would throw his plate down. He'd cry and push his body away from the table when the teachers tried to engage him in activities. But they really worked with him to focus on his motor skills and being in a group. And the other children helped too by bringing him toys and including them in their play. And now today, because of their work and that low ratio, well, it's even lower in toddler classrooms, but because of that attention, Kai is crawling, he's feeding himself, he's able to vocalize. The children also let the teachers know if he needs some. And when the therapist comes, they compliment the teachers on how well he's doing and growing, and the mom is really thrilled at parent-teacher conferences. She shared with how thrilled she was with his development. And I also want to say that because Neighborhood House uses a play-based curriculum that was selected with input from the parents, and one of the arguments in that document was that the government shouldn't be dictating to programs what curriculum to use, but we use a curriculum and we include the parents in deciding what curriculum that is. And as you know, we do individualized instruction in an inclusive environment with typically developing children. We do screening, referral, and coordination with therapy because we know that early intervention will help Kai be on, and children like him succeed in preschool, kindergarten, and beyond. And those, for those that don't know, Head Start is comprehensive. We support the whole child, their academic, social, emotional learning, their medical, dental, and nutritional needs. We also support the family, and we help parents. We hire parents that qualify for teaching positions. We help them get jobs. We help them connect to housing. We've helped many unhoused families with, you know, about to get evicted with multiple children, secure housing and health care, and providing leadership opportunities through our policy council. We have two of our Head Start parents are on our board of directors. So Head Start, as you know, has a proven track record of 60 years of results, helping children like Kai succeed, regardless of income and zip code. And it is vital to children's success and parents' ability to work, and that children at Neighborhood House, they enter kindergarten prepared and able to self-regulate. They're able to follow classroom rules, and defunding Head Start would cut the vital lifeline our nation's children and families by eliminating a bridge to stability and economic opportunity. And the Head Start Regional Office, Region 10, has been our critical partner in our success. They approve any changes to our program. They approve our facility that we're going to open in May. They were instrumental in approving that. We have two applications, one for playground improvements and another for safety improvements that we don't know the outcome of that.
Because there's nobody to answer
the phone. No one to answer, we don't know. We only have 6 months of funding, and so that 6 months will be up on June 30th, and we don't know if we're going to get the remaining 6 months of funding.
How many families would that impact if you didn't give it?
That's 429 families.
429?
Yeah, yes. Yeah, and then there's 180 families that are eligible on our waiting list too. So we have waiting lists. We have current families that are being served.
So the Trump administration is saying that they are going to eliminate Head Start because they want parental choice. How would you respond to that?
Oh, parents have lots of choices in our Head Start program. When we develop the curriculum, when we develop our individualization plans, we work with parents. We have home visits. Before we even, you know, begin the class, we go on a home visit and we talk to the family, like, tell us about your child. What is your hopes and dream for your child? How can we incorporate your family, your culture? Send us pictures, come and volunteer. Families are extremely involved in the Head Start program. Yeah. And, you know, in terms of, you know, determining how, what's the eligible, the priority criteria, we have our policy council that helps us, you know, they approve, like, who gets priority to get into the program, and, you know, what's the curriculum that we should provide, what activities do we want to have, how can we make this program more responsive, so.
It seems to me like what he's doing is taking away parental choice, because they won't have a choice if you're not there.
Right,
yeah.
So the regional office has just been a critical partner to our success. We don't know the status of a lot of things that we have pending, because we don't have.
So with the office closed, you don't even know who to call?
We have one person that we can call in Colorado that's been like our grantee specialist, but the person that's our program specialist that is a former Head Start director herself knows us and knows our program, and she's been terminated. She's been ripped.
Wow. Yeah. Well, we're about to hear from somebody who was one of those ripped people. So, Sarah, thank you for being here to tell us your story.
Yeah, once again, I'm Sarah Stafford Negra. So I'm thankful that I'm here, and I feel very privileged to be able to share about my story and a little bit about what other colleagues have experienced. So I worked for the Administration for Children and Families. I just celebrated my 8-year anniversary.
8 years.
Yeah. Prior to that, state and felt very honored and privileged to represent my people and my community as an Indigenous person within a federal office space. The Region 10 team recruited me to work with them because the CCDF, or Child Care and Development Fund, serves many tribal nations within Region 10. I would say the majority of the federally recognized tribes are within Region 10 and Region 9, and so it was really important previously to have staff that represented the communities that were being served through that program. And so over the years, I had several promotions, and my last one I achieved working out of our central office, but was honored by being able to stay within my community and not have to leave my community, which is where I gained my expertise in tribal early learning. And so I was on week 3 of back-to-back consecutive travel across the country, providing training to federally recognized tribes on how to fill out their CCDF funding application, which is due this summer. I was in Miami. I was ready to head out to my hotel room to go kick off the training with our staff, and I was told to check my email before I head downstairs to see if I was potentially RIFT, and I was. And so
were in Florida?
I was in Florida. I had just arrived the day before. I was about to walk out the door and to get the training started. I was one of the leads on site for the training. And so I had to immediately stop and find a flight back. And learning that 50% of our office's staff have been cut across the country, tribes and states are left without the people that are so dedicated to children and families and babies in particular, and have been given like a general email to reach out to figure out who it is they should connect with to help them fill out their grant applications. There was zero transition planning happening. There are files that cannot be accessed that are needed by the remaining staff. And there were just the staff that are left, of course, are qualified and are dedicated. However, the years of expertise from the staff that were RIFT, you can't make any sense out of it. In Region 10 in particular, again, which is where I started my work with the Office of Child Care, those staff in particular spent so much time relationship building with tribal nations and states. No two states are the same, no two tribal nations are the same, and CCDF requirements are quite complex, and people are really innovative in the ways that they choose to deliver those services. And so absent having that expertise and guidance and policy, historical institutional policy knowledge, questions are going to go unanswered. Grant applications are going to take a long time to review. I'm assuming non-compliances are going to be quite heavy because there isn't enough staff to review the grant applications. And for tribes in particular, there have been ongoing issues with spending down funds in really short time frames, and I know that challenge is just going to be exacerbated with this. And I foresee the building of facilities, because the applications are quite lengthy and need a lot of training, technical assistance, and one-on-one support are going to slow down, if not come to a halt, and the overall spend down for CCDF funds, especially for tribes, is going to be negatively impacted by the amount of staff that have been RIFT. And for me in particular, I was a senior tribal specialist whose primary focus was educating our office on federal trust responsibilities, treaty obligations, self-determination, tribal sovereignty, which can not necessarily be on the forefront within federal spaces. And so I worked really hard to educate all of our staff and increase tribal relations so that we can really meet our trust responsibilities. And our office was understaffed before. We made some great progress within the last 4 years, but all of that has been completely wiped. Yeah, completely wiped. And so, and without any tribal consultation, which is required anytime you make substantial changes that impact tribal nations as well.
Well, we are going to all be impacted by the loss of people like you, and you in particular. And I really appreciate your sharing what happened to you, because she's not alone. And it's just devastating to me to hear that for you personally, but for all the people you serve, the lack of expertise that was thrown out the door. And just so we all know, the email you got saying you were fired, did it give you a reason for that?
No, it just said that it was a general reduction in force, and of course there was inaccurate information. They had my performance ratings incorrect. I've never received anything less than the highest rating that you could receive. And they said that
this is not abnormal. Mm-hmm. This is what I'm hearing from a lot of people who were reffed.
Mm-hmm. They said they got rid of the like sub office that I was a part of, but that's not true. There are still staff remaining, but they said that my competitive area was being removed.
Unbelievable. Well, without people like you, we can't provide the services that everybody else was talking about. So this is just really a tragedy. And part of the reason I wanted to be here, so thank you all for your input, and know that this really helps me as I go back and try and make sure we are providing the services that are so important to so many families, and having you share your stories is really critical. We are not able to get this information from the agencies. Unlike any time in my career, we can't call the agencies. They will not share with us. So I'm out here talking to all of you because that's how I'm getting my information, so I really, really do appreciate it. You want to see if there's any
questions? Yeah, time for questions from the room. Claire?
My question is for the Secretary's son. Did you say 117 million are being held up or just in limbo?
Yeah, either delayed, frozen, or in limbo, yeah.
And is that primarily funds?
Primarily, and then CCDF discretionary, and our and the SSBG social service block grant.
Would you go back to working for the government if your job were to be restored, or are you looking for opportunities like in the private sector or with different? I'm just wondering how, if this were to be reversed, that kind of expertise could be restored, or do you get the sense that you and your colleagues are moving on and like building parallel systems or like thinking, kind of rethinking what those services could look like?
It's a really good question. I don't know, my answer might be different tomorrow, but my dedication has always been to my people, and if there are places that are going to be making decisions on the behalf of us, then we need to be at the table, and so for that reason, I would go back, and but that doesn't mean, though, that the work can't happen outside of this space, but there's so much institutional and systemic power there that I don't think that there will be a time where people like me or indigenous people aren't needed within these federal spaces.
Mm-hmm. And Senator Murray, if I could, how can Congress ensure that the funds that are appropriated are spent by the agencies that receive them and that the programs that are mandated by Congress are carried out? I know that that's kind of an ongoing tussle on many fronts.
Well, it's a legal tussle because
right.
By law, Congress says where the spending is going to go. The agencies have to spend it that way. It's called impoundment if they decide
right.
not to. So many of these cases are in court, and we'll, you know, we're waiting to see what the court, I don't, not her personally, but
mm-hmm.
the agency itself, as we heard. And we will see where the courts land on this. And I will just tell you, the courts have landed on the side of Congress, holds the power of the purse every single time. So I expect that that will be the case again. But know that we are also facing new budget requests from the administration that have to go through Congress. So moving forward, if they are saying they are cutting early childhood Ed Start or any of the food programs, SNAP or Medicaid, that if the Republican Congress passes that, then they will be in law and that can't be challenged. So two fronts.
Licensing and, you know, contractors, all of it. So we're planning on opening on May 21st. And we have the children all ready to go. They're all enrolled and we're ready to go. So, we are trying to figure out what our contingency plans are. We're doing some scenario planning. We have to because, you know, there's, you know, a new budget coming out on October 1st and there's
another $14 million funding source that could take the place of Head Start. And I was just talking to Secretary Sen about possibly Working Connections Child Care Program or ECAP, but that is, ECAP is also under a significant amount of pressure with the state budget. Working Connections Child Care doesn't provide that same comprehensive, you know, in parent involvement and you know, parent support, and you know, it's not the same level of robust services that we provide at Head Start. And so we haven't gotten that far yet, but we're trying to figure out what to do if we have to make some drastic changes.
Okay. There's no other questions. I think that will.
All right. Thank you, all of you. Back
thank
to work
you.
Here.
Thank you so much.
Appreciate your input. Thank you.
Thank you.